Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. This is Stephanie Sison, and I am here today for an odd position of being interviewed instead of interviewing. So I think everyone listening to KDNK knows Raleigh, and he is here to do the questioning today. So it's a little flip of roles, but really excited to talk about some projects I have going on and discuss them a little bit with our listeners.
I'm really grateful, Stephanie, that you're allowing me this opportunity to learn more about you and your work and what you have on the horizon. Today is the 27th of October when we're recording this, and we woke up to a lot of snow here in Colorado. Winter is officially upon us. But you are planning to be in a warm climate soon, so let's begin by talking about this project that you have planned out for the next few months.
Sure. So in about a week, I will be headed to Puerto Rico to a town called Quebrada, which is a little inland of Arecibo, a hilly area, and looking to begin a tropical medicinal herb farm project down there. As most of the listeners know, I grow medicinal herbs here in Colorado in the temperate climate. And so things like echinacea and blue vervain do amazing here, but things like turmeric and ginger, maybe not so much. So I'm really excited to explore the rest of the medicinal herbs that I haven't been able to cultivate in this region, and also to work in agriculture on the island. A whole majority of their food, and certainly medicine plants, don't come from the island. They come from very far away, even if there are things like papaya that could grow on the island. So excited to dive into the agriculture scene and community there and do my part in helping provide more organic food and medicine to the island and abroad.
Is the tropical climate something that you've experienced doing farming and agriculture in before?
Yes. So I grew up in Florida, although I didn't do a ton of gardening and farming when I was there. But in my early 20s, while I was traveling through Latin America, through mostly Ecuador, a little bit in Costa Rica, doing river guiding, that's actually how I found permaculture. So I started staying at permaculture farms in between rafting gigs, and just fell in love with permaculture itself, but also just my love for the tropics. I love Colorado, and I've been here for a decade, and I plan to continue to come back in the summertime, but I think I like surfing more than skiing, so I'm excited to get back to some humidity and kind of reimagine and recultivate relationships with tropical plants that I remember and have a familiarity with, but it's been a while since I've been with them.
So what is it about permaculture that made you fall in love with it in such a way that now it's become sort of the main pillar in your career?
Sure. I think it really was those farms that I visited, that I had already seen farms and grown gardens and things like that, but to be in a place that these systems created and utilized created a life for the people and animals there that you could stay in one place indefinitely, and that place would be better for having you there. I think there's this concept in land stewardship that we as humans, the best we can do is just leave it alone and not mess with it. And I think we can do far better than that. I think we can go to places that either need repair or are intact and have a really beneficial relationship with them. And they can be better and healthier for our participation in them, especially with longevity of interest. I think permaculture really pushes you to move to perennial agriculture and pushes you to think about how long-term systems work and how water systems can be restored and how plants can be planted that will yield for hundreds of years forward. It really is a system that is not so great for churn and burn annual agriculture, where you pop in a site and you grow for a year and then you pop out and you go somewhere else. And it really is designed to create systems that will provide and get better and better over the years and over the generations and over many, many hundreds of years, if that's as long as you want to stay or pass it on or work within the system. But I was really inspired to see land become better because of our interaction rather than degraded or just left alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it places humans in a different sort of role where we're no longer like a parasite, which many people accuse humanity of.
Sure.
But we've seen with so many cultures around the world that it doesn't have to be that way, and we can have a healing relationship of gratitude with the land that nurtures us.
Agree.
So, speaking of healing, you work a lot with medicinal herbs. How did you come into relationship with medicine?
I think, again, spurring from those travels, I got a couple different issues to deal with, like staph infection. Mm-hmm. Was one big one that I came back to the States with, and it was in my bloodstream. And I went to this natural healing store and asked them what to do. And I had gone to a regular doctor, and they said I had staph and, you know, send you off with a prescription for antibiotics, which I never did fill. I went to this natural food store instead and found out about a few different things: cayenne pepper, hot and cold water treatments, and charcoal. Started utilizing those to heal the staph infection, and within 2 weeks it was completely cleared. And I went back to the doctor to see if it still was in my system, and it was completely gone from my system without a single antibiotic. So that was my first real exploration into these natural medicines and how effective they were. And coming from a place as a child where I went through the medical system because of thyroid illnesses and things like that, and how devastating some of those practices are, to find something so effective and also that doesn't come with the mountain of side effects and after effects of some of our mainstream medical approaches was really inspiring. I think another thing that inspired me about natural medicine is, yes, you can buy the herbs from me or you can buy them from natural grocer, and that's really great, but if you desire to do so, you can just grow them in your backyard or your front yard or your pot in your house. It makes healing accessible to everyone, regardless of financial position or even of time. These, you know, it might take a certain amount of time to grow a tomato garden because it takes a lot of compost and it takes, you know, attracts some pests here and there. But growing a sage plant, it has literally no pest problems or disease problems. It's perennial. It will grow for years and years. You can just harvest it and enjoy it both for food or for medicine, to clear up your sore throat or help with teeth issues, all kinds of things. And so the accessibility of medicinal herbs is a really big draw to me. And then over the years, I've just had so many opportunities to use them to help create healing or just to really reinforce health. And how effective and gentle they are and how much they work with our body's own systems is really inspiring to me. Beyond that, like, I say that I grow green beans because I want to eat green beans, but herbs I grow kind of because I have to. I'm not sure who's growing who most of the time or who's the boss. It's probably not me. Looking at the flowers, the colors, the scents, the textures, they're so diverse and they're so stimulating to your entire olfactory system that it's just really intoxicating to be around them, even without consuming them. So every part of them really kind of gets me going. And it's this endless exploration that I don't ever see a culmination of. It's just a deepening knowledge all the time. And the more I learn, the more I know that I need to learn and there is to learn. So that's exciting.
Yeah, especially when it comes to herbs and plant medicine. So reflecting on this past season of 2020, what plants surprised you? What were you most excited about? Any disappointments as far as things you tried to grow?
No, I don't think I have any disappointments. I mean, there's always things that work more than something else every year, but I've been farming for so long that that's just actually part of the beauty. And the beauty of a diverse system is that if one thing fails, something else does better than expected. And so that's a really wonderful thing about it. And so I can't even pick out anything that failed, probably because of that concept. I think I was really blown away this year, and I do have a different love every year. I love them all, but something that I either haven't grown before or hasn't expressed itself in the way that it did this year. I think one that I had not grown until this year was night blooming tobacco, and I don't sell the tobacco, but it is this incredibly beautiful plant that puts on these crazy white flowers that all the pollinators just dive into face first. They love it. And at about 11 o'clock at night, they bloom, and the whole garden smells like jasmine. Whoa. It's amazing. I tried to distill the flowers at night when they were open to see if I could get that jasmine smell, which I couldn't get. But you just had to enjoy it for what it was, and it was your little gift for taking your midnight walk through the garden, was this intoxicating smell of jasmine. So that was a really interesting plant to cultivate this year. I think another really big win, and this is a shout out to CORE and their amazing support for programming in the Valley and programs that are looking to be energy efficient, is we completed our new dehydrator. We're not all the way to net zero, which is our plan. We still need to add a little bit more solar and things like that to it, but it does have solar and we are on our way. We are one of the only planned to be net zero dehydrators that I know of for crops, all dehydrated on stainless steel, just a really beautiful 45 foot long, 8 foot wide space that is able to be 100% shade dried. We can control all the temperatures so we can keep all the herbs dehydrating under 95 degrees, which keeps all their essential oils intact and the aromatics. So we really were able to dry a lot more herbs this year and at a much higher caliber than we had done before. So thanks to everybody at CORE for supporting our net zero crop dehydrator, because it's starting to manifest this year. So that was really exciting.
You're listening to Katie and Kay. This is the Living Permaculture Show. I'm Raleigh Burley, turning the mic on Stephanie Sison today to hear about the projects that she has going on. You were just mentioning your herbs and this new space, thanks to CORE, that you have for dehydrating. Where can people acquire the things that you grow?
You probably have to come talk to me. So we do have a website, which is biodynamicbotanicals.com, although there is rarely anything for sale on it. Mostly we're selling bulk herbs to apothecaries. So the best way, if you're not local, to access our herbs is to go to either Alpine Botanicals Apothecary in Nederland, Colorado, or Rebecca's Apothecary in Boulder, or Rooted Apothecary in Crested Butte. So those are the three big apothecaries that use our herbs, as well as one online distributor, which is thegrownetwork.com. And so they have some of our herbs as well. But if you're local and you're looking for smaller portions of herbs. We're sold out this year, but come to the ranch, come to Sustainable Settings, and you're able to find a few blends inside the farm store. And then during the season, come out and volunteer, and I guarantee we can get you some herbs to take home of whatever you're working with that day. And that's a really great way to engage both in the farm and in the live plants, as well as have access to either genetic material if you want to grow some at home, or some herbs to take home and try from whatever your efforts were in the garden that day.
So we began the show talking about this move that you're making to Puerto Rico for the winter. However, it sounds like you are intending to keep one foot in the Roaring Fork Valley.
That is true. So our seasons really line up really well, although you can grow year-round in Puerto Rico. A lot of the plants will be perennial in nature that we're growing down there. And it's a new site, so it's going to need a lot of soil building work and cover crops and mulching and things that will allow us to come back here during our growing season here in Colorado and turn everything there into cover crop, or just wait for the perennials to mature while we're gone. Because it rains a lot, we don't have so much worry about irrigation systems and things like that to maintain. I really love the Roaring Fork Valley and love the medicinal herb gardens here at Sustainable Settings, and we'll return late April or so to get going here. So the 6 month there and 6 month here is the plan for a bit as we kind of kick the tires on this new concept and grow in both places.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned growing turmeric, ginger, other things in the tropical climate that aren't quite possible here in Colorado. So what is your vision for biodynamic botanicals, or what's your best case scenario? Where would you like to see things grow?
Well, and the one in Puerto Rico will be called Wild Island Botanicals. So it's two separate businesses. Cool. I would like to see creating these two models. And so now with the two different sites, we'll have a model for kind of anyone's climate, both a tropical or subtropical area, as well as a temperate climate. One of my biggest goals with the farming is to figure out ways to do it in the most ecological methods possible. And I understand why some farmers choose to use plastics as mulches and weed barriers and things like that. From a labor perspective, it's one of the biggest time and money vacuums is worrying about weeds and weeding and things like that. But I think that we can do better, and that's just an area I'm not willing to budge on, that we should be able together to figure out ways to farm economically and to make an income and also hold to the highest standards of ecological production. We've got the skills. There's enough people out there in the world with brilliant brains. If we just put them together and share this knowledge, I think that we can do it, especially with medicinal herbs, because we're not talking about bib lettuce that is so tender and we've bred it so far away from its wild counterpart that it needs us. It needs a weed-free bed. It needs lots of compost and regular, predictable watering cycles. And it needs to also, from our consumer perspective, be very perfectly unblemished and perfectly beautiful with not a little bite out of it. Mm-hmm. And so that creates a challenge for the vegetable grower. For the herb growers, though, we're in a little different of a position where we're mostly working with perennials. We're also working with genetics that are much more wild and much more similar to their wild counterparts. They're strong, they're resilient. Most of them are weeds, right, by some people's opinion. Burdock, you know, there's so many plants that are weeds in some people's eyes, and they're just really amazing medicinal. So they have this strength about them that's really spectacular. In addition, growing them in a more wild setting challenges them, and it creates these secondary metabolites and chemicals that the plant produces due to stressors. And if we baby them, we can make big plants. We can make a lot of plant mass, but they'll be weak and watered down compared to ones that actually had to kind of duke it out and live a little bit in a more balanced and diverse, challenging environment like they would in the wild. And so if we can figure out a way to get as close to that as possible while still being able to get a yield and have a viable business, that's my goal. And to do that and then demonstrate that to other people. And I don't need a 50-acre herb farm. For the pollinators, for the planet, what we need is lots of little herb farms all over the country, all over the world. All of us growing different herbs that are good for our environment and good for the pollinators around us and our bodies, and replicate it all over the world if we can. I think that it's doable, and I think that it's economically viable for small farmers to do and get into, and the demand is just absolutely massive. I sell everything I grow practically before I grow it, because people want this medicine and they want the highest quality possible. So I hope to help get more farmers doing it if I can, and show them that it's possible, viable, and that we can do it without plastics, and we can do it at the highest efficacy imaginable.
You mentioned about the new dehydrating chamber that you've built using stainless steel. Mm-hmm. And that's a decision as well based on your ethics, right?
Absolutely. I think that we could have saved a lot of money and put window screen as the mesh to hold the herbs, which a lot of people have to do because it is a much more financially doable material to work with. But to spend all this time and energy and thought and love growing the highest quality biodynamically grown organic medicinal herbs, and then to dry them on fiberglass, just didn't feel right. And so we worked with some manufacturers and figured out a price point that could work for everybody, and we're able to get it to work. And we spent a little bit extra money in order to feel really good about what we were putting our herbs on, and every step of the way looking for every opportunity to do better every day.
Well, we are nearly out of time. For fans of the Living Permaculture Show, what's the plan going forward with this show over the next few months while you're in Puerto Rico?
Sure. So we're very excited to report that Living Permaculture is going on the road with me to Puerto Rico. So the last couple of times I was there, I met many, many farmers of different kinds of things, permaculture farmers, fruit farmers, animal farmers, just the whole gamut all across the island. And I'm sure I have way more to meet than I already met. So we are planning to take you on the road, take you to these farms, and interview these different farmers and growers and land stewards to learn more about the methods that they employ on the island, and to learn more about the food systems in Puerto Rico and the food stability, and also the great food instability that exists there, and what people are doing and what kind of change they're helping to push forward in on an island that largely imports their food. But there's a lot going on there, and I'm excited to dig in deeper and share it with our listeners. And Raleigh's headed down there too, so he's gonna be hitting the road with me, and we're gonna find some really amazing examples and stories to share with all of you at home.
I really look forward to it. So gratitude to you, Stephanie, for the work that you're doing.
My pleasure.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add? We've got about 2 minutes.
Nope, I think that's it. Maybe just Jerome is not going to be with us on this journey over the next couple months. But if anyone's feeling inspired, do check in with him. I'm sure he would love some wintertime volunteers in those tropical greenhouses. And we are taking some of the genetics from Jerome's tropical greenhouse in Basalt to Puerto Rico, which seems like it's going an interesting direction. Yeah. But Brazilian cherry, which is Suriname cherry, which is fruiting in Jerome's greenhouse right now, his dragon fruit, moringa, quite a few other plants that Jerome's been growing either newly or for years. We're going to bring those genetics down and put them in the ground in Puerto Rico. So a little piece of Basalt and Crimpy and Jerome will be on this new farm project.
Yeah, if you can't make it to Puerto Rico, Jerome's tropical greenhouse is the next best thing.
Absolutely.
And I hope that we do touch base with Jerome. Maybe that would be a fun show.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Well, Stephanie Saison, thanks for sharing your story with us and for Living Permaculture on KDNK.
Thanks, and we'll see you next month from the islands.